Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
However, standing by right now is the one and the only, Sean Mooney.
Who?
Mooney, everybody's got a price for the $1 million man.
After you threw him off through the announce table, Taker climbs back down, he gets in the ring, and he goes, see if he's breathing.
So right before I called 911, I thought she'd fallen asleep. Kind of shook her a little bit to wake her up, and she did not respond.
And I'll go down to my grave, testifying or whatever, swearing that Davey was not on drugs. If he was on drugs, the way Brett says, how great does that make Davey?
Are you laughing, Sean?
I get off the track here all the time.
Did you just laugh, Sean?
If they would do a movie about your life, who would you want to play your part?
Well, George Clooney, of course. Who else could it be?
Attention, Sean Mooney, you scum, you slime, you maggot. If there's no further questions, you're dismissed. Carry on, maggot.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of PTSM. Thanks again for tuning in. Coming off the episode featuring Jerry Briscoe, love talking with Jerry because I tell you, I had no idea there were so many different sides to Jerry. Not only the skilled wrestler, the toughest nailed shooter, he had this reputation as being one of the toughest guys in the business. Also an incredible businessman along with his brother Jack. And somebody who just liked to have a lot of fun, and he certainly did that along the way during an incredible career. We've got another great episode of Primetime coming your way, another example of someone who got an incredibly lucky break, an opportunity, and he seized it and never looked back. You may have heard of method acting before, but after you hear the story of Nikita Koloff, you're gonna realize that, method acting is when you actually live and become that character. Well, Nikita Koloff took it to the extreme, and as I said, you're gonna hear all about it, and the fascinating road that he traveled in the world of professional wrestling, one that amazingly did not include a stop in the WWE, and he explains that, talks about it, but that's kind of incredible, don't you think? Listen to this great episode with the Russian nightmare Nikita Koloff, and we started all off. With this huge opportunity that Scott Simpson at the time, before he was Nikita Koloff, got when he got a phone call from his good friend, Joe Laurinaitis, Road Warrior. And he said, hey, Scott, you want to be a professional wrestler? And Scott said, yeah, sure. And he said, well, this is what you're going to do. You're going to shave your head and you're going to show up at this office and you're going to talk to a man named Jim Crockett. All right, let's get to it. Ding, ding, ding.
So Joe makes the call, yeah. I still remember, it's 9 o'clock one morning, he makes the call, answers the phone, it wasn't a long conversation, he just says, hey, there's a couple guys in the Carolinas, Don Cornoto, Ivan Koloff, they came up with this storyline of a nephew for Ivan, supposed to compete in the Olympic Games in Los Angeles, the boycott preventing the nephew from doing that. So they're going to turn him pro. He's become Ivan's protege, are you interested? I go, well, and I said, I first said to Joe, I go, well, Joe, do they know I've got no amateur wrestling background, no professional training. He goes, yeah, I told him that. Because here's what they asked Joe. Don Canoto came to, Don Canoto, I didn't go off with the World Tag Team Champions, NWA. Don comes to Joe and says, hey, this was the question, Sean. Do you know any big guys who wouldn't mind shaving their head becoming a Russian? Yeah. That was the question.
Becoming a Russian, too.
And becoming a Russian. And Joe goes, yeah, as a matter of fact, I know the guy right now.
I got your
call,
guy.
Right?
Yeah.
And he calls me, and that's basically, I go, well, what do I got to do? He goes, well, here's this promoter's number. His name's Jim Crockett. Give him a call. Okay. Hmm. So I hang up the phone with Joe. I call Jim. I call the office. I call Jim Crockett. He answers. He gets to the phone. And I go, Mr. Crockett, Joe Laurinaitis, blah, 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 told me to call you. Yeah. And he goes, and he's like, yep. And I go, and by the way, this is before cell phones, taking a picture and sending it through the wire, right? I mean, it's just it wasn't a 5-minute conversation. I just said, now, Mr. Crockett, I understand this story, a nephew and all. I go, but do you understand, before I load up my car and come to a town I've never been to before, that I've never been in the ring. Mm-hmm. I have no professional training. Mm-hmm. I have no amateur wrestling background. Do you understand that? Yeah, it's what they told me.
Oh, okay.
I go, okay. I go, what's next? He goes, be in my office June 4th with your head shaved. I go, that's it? He goes, that's it. All right, see you then. That was it. That was the conversation.
That's where it began. And not everybody can do accents. The dude, the Russian. You got to have this. But could you do that?
Yeah.
I mean, were you good at that? Because a lot of people couldn't, and they just wouldn't even let them talk. But were you able to do it, or did you have to start practicing?
Well, so here's the deal. Because it's a kind of an important part of the story. Yeah. Remember, 12 years old, Iron Man magazine, and what I said to myself.
Yeah.
You're one day, that guy. Yeah. I'm going to look like one of those guys.
Yeah.
So the day I walked into Jim Crockett's office, what he saw with his eyes was a guy who was 285 pounds, 8% body fat with a 34-inch waist. That's what he saw.
Yeah.
So I'd become exactly what I said 12 years prior that I would become. That's what he saw, first impression walking in. And of course, part of the story was you don't speak any English. You're just off the boat. Okay? Yeah. Well, so that makes it easy, right? All I got to do is look mean and right? Act mean, look mean, right? So that was part of the story. So he introduces me to Ivan and Don in the hallway that day. Take a look at your new partner. Nikita Koloff's born in the hallways of Charlotte, North Carolina that day. They literally put me right in the interview station. Don't talk. I want your shirt off. Chains over your neck. Ivan, give me your chains. Look mean, they talk. I'm like, okay. That was the beginning instructions. The accent, then, I didn't talk for 6 months on television at all. And I didn't talk hardly anywhere else, by the way, at all. And in the meantime, I'm in my head, I'm like, if I really was from there, how would I talk? What would this word sound like? What would that word sound like? What would a sentence sound like? And so I took 6 months to develop that accent.
Yeah, but we didn't have the internet in a sense where you could, now you just get on Google and I could bring up somebody speaking Russian. I could get, you're weak, I'd break your legs or whatever, but where could you draw from to even hear it? Ivan helped you? I mean,
obviously Ivan did speak with the accent. Yeah, so, I'm on the interview set every week with him and listening to him, et cetera, and or out in public or whatever. So obviously that helped. And I did pick up a Russian work. I found a Russian workbook in the days of cassette tapes.
Oh, right.
Got a cassette tape that I would listen to that teach me a few Russian words and learn to sign my name in Russian. Uh-huh. But again, as far as developing the character, I still just kind of played around with that in my head and in the car, kind of practicing what that would sound like,
Wow. Well, you pulled it off. I mean, in big time, and they call it method acting, but nobody else really. I mean, there were guys that did their gimmick to where they would do it in and out of the arena. But you took it further than that. And was it to really capture that character? What was your thinking behind that? I don't know if you had done any acting in, you know, before that, or what was your motivation behind that?
Well, couple ways that I can address that question. Of course, I never the answer did I take any acting? The answer is no. I had to stand up in front of a class in school talking. That's the irony of it as well. But
really.
Yeah, and I never even knew the term method acting until much later on that was actually what I did and what I was doing. I learned later on that terminology. But again, yeah, and Crockett, nobody asked me to do this. I just, in my mind, I thought, okay, let me define that just quickly and briefly.
Yeah.
I'm a 100. When I picked up Iron Man magazine and I said one day I'm going to look like one of those guys, I'm not a 50-50 guy or an 80-20 or 70-30. I'm a 100, meaning I'm all in and I will do that and make it happen. When I start playing football, again, I'm a 100. I don't want to just play football. I want to be a starter. I want to catch touchdowns. I want to be all conference. I want to be all American, okay?
Yeah, so you were the guy that you were the guy that drove everybody crazy at practice because you practiced like you played. I remember coaches telling us.
That is correct.
You were that guy, right?
In fact, I was that guy. In fact, you ask Barry Darsell, he will tell you that very thing.
He'll really?
Go, here's the funny part. Yeah. Darsell's in Louisiana with Nikolai Volkoff, right? And he's doing a turncoat thing down there, and they heard there's a shooting Russian up in the Carolinas. When we brought him to Carolinas, he looked at me and goes, dude, I should have known it was you. Because I'm that guy. Yeah. I'm 100.
He knew it, yeah.
And so I got into wrestling. I go, all right, I'm just not going to just be a wrestler. I'm going to be a world champion. And if I'm going to be a world champion, I'm going to get this character over. Then I've got to carry this accent 24/7 anywhere in public, period. And learn to sign my name in Russian and learn a few Russian phrases or a few Russian words and legally become him and mentally become him. So that was the deal.
So it was like, I mean, really 24/7? I mean, you lived it.
24/7. In fact, Mark Merrill, right? Johnny B. Bass.
Yep. Yeah.
Mark Merrill recently told me this story at an autograph signing. He goes, dude, I've never had a chance to tell you this, but when I first came to the Carolinas, and I'd be in the dressing room, me and some of the other young guys, newer guys, and you'd be talking with that accent, we're looking at you. He goes, you scared us to death. We didn't want to scare. He goes, and we look at each other and go, does he know we're smart, that he doesn't have to talk with that accent here in the dressing room? And one step further, guys, I maintain that character 3 years after I walked away from wrestling.
Wow.
I still maintain the persona 24/7.
You must have driven people crazy because, you know, have you heard the story with Jim Carrey did the comedian's name? What the heck is his name? Andy Kaufman. Okay. Have you heard the story,
right,
though, where Jim Carrey played Andy Kaufman in the movie and he did, you know, 24/7. He lived that character the entire time and drove them out of their minds. Did the people around you go, okay, Nikita, okay, we can take a little break here?
Well, if they did, they didn't say it to me. If I said it to each other. But
they just got used to it?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everyone in the ring. Listen, in the ring, I was talking with you. You know, obviously, I'm working the crowd and stand on the apron, whether it was with Dusty or you know, whoever my partner was. You know, I guess, okay, let's see what he does. This is who he is.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So you would wake up in the morning and go right in to character.
If I stepped outside my front door, yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. Well, obviously it served you well. And I know from your book, and it just made me think of it, Nikita, A Tale of the Ring and Redemption. It served you well at times, being, pretending that you were having difficulty with the language. And I think like the guy at the gym wanted you to pay for membership. Were there other examples where it served you well?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. the whole gym story. Yeah. For sake of time, we won't go in. But the whole they'll just have to buy the book and read the whole story. But it especially as a heel, especially as a bad guy, right? Yeah. I mean, because that was back in the era. I didn't sign autographs. I just did. I was a bad guy, right? So I want people to hate me. Well, I guess part of the reason why I was, at one point, voted the number one most hated guy in wrestling, right? Because people would try to talk to me, try to approach me. Ivan would go, don't even bother, or whatever, or try to get him to talk to me, or Darso, or whoever. They go, you talk to me. Yeah. I'm not going to talk. You want to talk to me? You go approach him and talk to him, Uh-huh. So yeah, it served me well.
So Ivan was such a great mentor to you. I was kind of, and I didn't know of him. I never got the opportunity to work with him. But why did he accept you? And I'm not saying that he wouldn't do that for other people, but for some reason he must have seen something in you, because immediately it seems he took you in and became that mentor. What do you think it was that clicked?
That's pretty easy answer. Really, him and Don Canota both. I mean, because the rest of the story is, we finished the interview, or the rest of the beginning of the story is, we finished the interviews that day. Crockett said, be in Raleigh, North Carolina, my night, you're going to wrestle on television. Mm. And I'd never been in a ring, right? And I'm going to wrestle on television in front of a sold-out crowd. Okay. Obviously, it kept the match short, but nevertheless, on television, sold out crowd, never been in a ring. But for the next few months, Don and Ivan and I would get to towns early, 2-3 hours early. They'd bump all over the ring, teaching me the mechanics of wrestling. I'd sit in the corner, watch the world tag match. Ivan would sit in my corner, watch my brief match. Mm-hmm. And then in the car, we'd discuss psychology. But the short answer to that question, why Ivan embraced me, is he said to me. He said to me, there was at a certain point that he knew, and you guys have been around the business long enough though, there, believe it or not, there's actually some jealousy in the business. There's some envy
Really?
Some of that happens. Yeah. Can you believe
that?
Some of that actually, imagine that. It actually happens in this business. Jealousy, envy. And so he kind of got wind of guys who are like, what the heck? This guy walks in, he waltzes in here and becomes, world champion, overnight and never even been in the ring. And I've been busting my tail for 8 years and can't even get a break.
Yeah.
So he said to me on more than one occasion, Dita, here's the deal. Obviously, you didn't pay your dues in a wrestling school or in a wrestling ring. Mm-hmm. But you paid your dues obviously in other ways. Look at your physique, look at your attitude, look at your, and so don't let any of that bother you. You just focus on the success of your career, and I'm going to, help you every way that I can. And so that's how that conversation went. He just, yeah, he became like a, like an uncle that I never had. You know, so.
Well, it seemed like you were in university during this whole period, because like you said, you're getting to the ring early, or the arenas early. They're working with you. Then you have a match, kind of your experience for the day, and then you're riding in cars and it's classroom time. When did it all start to make sense to you? When did it all start to click? And when did you feel that you were really starting to make strides in the ring? Did it take a while?
Crockett's plan, he put me on the fast track, no doubt. If you think about it, I had a lot of really short matches early on. Squash matches. Beating two guys at one time, handicap matches. And I guess both Don and Ivan both said to me, in fact, they've said it over and over. Don, when I run into him now, he'll go, gosh, I look back, I can't believe we just threw you out there like that. He goes, however, here's what he says. He goes, but you did it, man. You did it. You embraced it. You made it work. I would say I was so fortunate so early on. A guy named like Johnny Weaver was legendary in the Mid-Atlantic, right? The famous sleeper hold. Well, I got to wrestle guys like Johnny Weaver, like Dory Funk Jr. Guys who were, stellar names in the industry that would get in the ring with me, and teach you the ropes, no pun intended. Guys like legendary Johnny Weaver in the Mid-Atlantic, famous sleeper hold, the Dory Funk Jr. Rufus R. Freight Train Jones. Some guys who had stellar names in this territory, and who were willing to get in the ring with me and teach me wrestling and teach me the business, old school mentality. And, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. The list goes on. But, I would say I adapted fairly quick, although, I still had a lot to learn, but if you consider the fact that within 13 months of the day I started, I was the world tag team champion, the world six-man champion, and for the first time ever wrestling Ric Flair for the world heavyweight title at the first ever Great American Bash. That's crazy.
Yeah, that is insane. And especially when you think about, how big the NWA was then. It wasn't some little operation off of there. The WWF was just getting really going under Vince McMahon, and to think what you did in that is amazing. It really is.
Right.
I know that Cernotto left, and then Crusher Khrushchev, who played the better Russian, Barry or you?
Well, and that's what's funny about, people like kind of laugh at Barry's character, but it wasn't intended for him to be a Russian. It was intended for him to be a turncoat, and hence him just speaking English on any interviews.
Yeah, right.
But we tagged him with the Crusher Khrushchev name, to give him, to try and get some heat on him while everyone knowing, hey, this cat's really American, but he's teamed up with these Russians, and that was the idea behind it. Right. But Barry did a great job, as the third wheel. He did a great job.
Yeah. Well, and you got to look back at that fondly, and even then, because you guys would cross paths. Talk about those guys from Minneapolis, from Robbinsdale, and I know somewhat the Henry. Did you look around sometimes and how did this happen? This fraternity of guys that came from this little area, that we're all together and keep crossing paths throughout your career.
Yeah, one of the guys that graduated with Kurt and Rick, his name was Jim Younger. Uh-huh. When he got out of high school, he started a gym up there in Minneapolis called The Gym in the Robbinsdale Golden Valley area. And it became a mecca not just of professional wrestlers. Mm-hmm. This gym, he shut it down after 25 years, but this gym, I mean, Jesse Ventura worked out at the gym. There were world-class power lifters, mm-hmm. Record holders. There were world-class bodybuilders, men and women. I mean, it was a mecca for athletes. So, guys like Wayne Bloom and Mike Enos, who came out of Cooper High School, right there in that area. Scott Norton. I mean, gosh, yeah the list yeah. is it's crazy. They all kind of gravitated to the gym. And then some of them, I think, saw my success, the Road Warriors' success,
yeah.
Darso, Henning, Rude, and getting wrestling too, and that kind of set them on that path.
Yeah, just incredible. I mean, a movie really does have to be made about that. It's just amazing. But getting back to that period of time, and we kind of digress there a bit, but I think we're talking 84, and this is when it really starts rolling for you. As you mentioned, you're tag team champion, six-man tag team, and all around these legends. And, with Dusty, I think this is when at this period of time that you started working closely with Dusty, and what impact did he have on your career?
Tremendous impact. I mean, he came into the territory as the booker. Right. I was about 6 months in, and I was one of the first guys he did an angle with. The little arm wrestling thing in the ring, and people bought it, the whole American. That's kind of where the Russian Nightmare kind of came from. I'm like, because I was like, oh, you're the American Dream, Nightmare. In fact, I'll be the Russian Nightmare,
right.
and kind of thing. So we did some angles there, and had some matches there. I'm sure he was around the business a long time, saw my dedication to the character and my dedication to the career. And so he really, I feel, put me in some really good storylines, some great angles with some of the guys, and as well as himself. And then, of course, eventually, as we know, when Magnum TA had the accident, the wreck, mm-hmm. him and Crockett pulled me into a room one night and come up with a brilliant idea of, I think, the first ever babyface Russian, right? First ever good guy Russian, right.
They turned
So I give a ton of credit to Dusty for not only catapulting my career early on, but also really having the insight to go, I think this would work if we became the superpowers.
Yeah. Well, and then you would have these, some great matches with Ric Flair as well. And, coming into the business where you did, and this happened, we're talking a couple of years here, that when did you have, and maybe you did have it all the way through, but when did you have the confidence to feel that, I'm among the absolute best wrestlers in the world. I mean, they were among the elite. Well, you're talking Dusty and Rick and Ric Flair and some of these other people that you're in the ring with. Did you always have that confidence, or did you have to get to a point where, yeah, I belong here?
I just had to listen, and then by becoming a good listener, I was able to learn.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, because I was in there, as you mentioned, with some of the stellar names of wrestling,
yeah.
who were so schooled in the art of wrestling and masters. Dusty was a master psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
Rick was a master. Rick Steamboat was a master psychologist. And so the pressure was really kind of taken off in terms of me having to go in and try to orchestrate a match, because I'm in there with the masters of wrestling. All I had to do is be a good listener, follow their direction, and execute what they wanted me to do, which I tried to do to the best of my ability and was able to succeed to a certain degree, that helped to catapult that character to the success it had. And so that's the way I would answer that question. I just fortunate to be around the guys that I was around. They're the ones who made Nikita Koloff look good.
Yeah, but also you if you didn't have the talent, there's no way you would be stepping in there. And I know that you say that, you know, Ric Flair could make a broom look good, but you still you had to be able to carry your own in that ring, and it wasn't just with someone like Ric Flair. And you know, I'd love to get in and talk to a lot of these great matches, but of course many remember the matches with Magnum TA, which you had that great feud with in I think it started in 86.
That's the 7.
87? Yeah.
No,
I was just going to say, that's what I wanted to get into was, I think that is one of the greatest concepts for wrestling matches ever. And I don't know why it hasn't been brought back in some shape or form, because it was brilliant and the way it went. So first tell me how that got started and where that idea came from.
Again, Dusty was a master at, I mean, he doesn't probably get as much credit or enough credit, but you know, whether it's the Best of 7, the War Games or other ingenious ideas like that, originated from my super power partner, Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, the power of power, to three to be power, if you will. Yeah. You know.
That's good.
But Dusty, you know, came up with the idea, the concept of the Best of 7, and looking back, I think it was brilliant. And then I couldn't have been partnered with a better guy. I mean, Magnum TA, the all-American looking apple pie, hot American hot dog, you know, Chevrolet guy, right?
Yeah.
And we had, you know, we just recently, him and I did a Q&A at the Crop Up tournament for some VIPs and discussed that specifically, and how our styles of work, mm-hmm. him and I,
yeah.
just really complemented one another, and which is why I believe it made it into what it became, was because of our willingness to maintain the integrity of how we work with one another and the realism of it. That's what a lot of people will say, the fans, is the realism of those matches, them, you know, individually,
yeah.
as well as the concept of the Best of 7.
Yeah.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And it was that sense of reality, too, like, as you just mentioned, that it wasn't just the work in the ring. It was all that surrounded it, too. And I don't know if this was born because of, you know, we're thinking of like a World Series that we see or in the NBA. But the idea of it, and then have you lose the first three matches, I mean, I don't, who came up with that idea? And how did that, I would have loved to have been there live to just see how that the drama went down for that, especially in those three, you know, the first three. It's like if you're watching a World Series, it must have been the same feeling for people.
Yeah, well, and you said a little bit, so Magnum lost the first three, right?
Yeah.
And again, he's the all-American boy, right? So
yeah.
what better, right? So it did center around, obviously, Dusty was a big Celtics fan, yeah. you know, NBA fan. So, you know, the Best of 7 there, the World Series, right?
Yeah, the comeback.
The World Series, the NBA of wrestling, right?
Yeah.
So that is kind of, that helped the concept there, the idea, right?
Right.
But so the idea of the Russian, two things. The idea of the Russian... Again, so showing how superior we are,
crushing,
right?
Crushing them.
Crushing yeah, Magnum, yeah. The all-American boy, yeah. crushing him. And the idea of a Russian actually having the U.S. title around his waist drew so much heat from the fans. And then what better story than the potential all-American make the big comeback from 3-0 and win 4-3, right?
Yeah, right.
What better story than that?
Right. And then you kill it. It was great. It was great.
Well, so for him, yeah, for the 3-1, 3-2, 3-3, and then the seventh and the final, the finale, you know, would just put the whole thing over the top and over the edge. Yeah. And I must say, too, the idea of a contract signing with his mom, you know, he never smartened his mom up to that. We just talked about this.
Really?
His mom never knew nothing, never knew wrestling was not real, pro wrestling. And so when you see her reaction at that contract signing, that was like real rad. Like, these guys are killing my son here, right? And you know, it was interesting. So over the weekend, playing these golf tournaments and stuff, and listening to some of the pro athletes and their view of it, over and over and over again, I've heard it once, guys. I've heard it a million times, how that era was so magical. And their conclusion is, because everyone knows it's all scripted, right? They can all but they can also tell it, even though they know it. They go, but in that era, there was such a genuineness to the matches. Like, right. And again, right now we're talking about me and Magnum, right?
Yeah.
That they genuinely look so real, which is why the fan reaction was so real, because of that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, that sense of reality to it, and it wasn't just what was happening in the ring; it was the way you surrounded that whole thing with the press conference, or and the fact that, man, you talk about mom selling it, you know. So,
yep.
Is that stand out as among it has to be? But you had so many, but as one of the all time best series, best angles,
highlights,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most often mentioned by the fans, which is why I love, getting out, doing autograph signings, mingling with the fans, because now I hear their stories and get their perspective on all this.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's just so cool to hear. That's the most mentioned, is the best of seven. The very first Great American Bash against Flair, it ranks kind of up there as well. And the very first ever War Games essentially ranks up there. And then the turn to come to Dusty's rescue and create the superpowers. Those are probably the four major highlights looking back. Although, like you said, there were many, but those are probably the top four that would come to mind.
Yeah. That's it's tough to choose, I would imagine, when you work with people like that. But also pulling off the turn too, with after, God, you were a shit hill, man. People just hated you. And to pull off that turn, talk a little bit about what was involved there and how it worked.
Well, that could have been the biggest bomb ever, in wrestling, or the most brilliant idea ever, right? Potentially, right? The potential is it could go either way there, right? So the psychology behind that was, okay, we're gonna, and they gave me the choice, and I said, let's go for it, and so let's give it a shot. So the psychology that particular night was, Dusty goes to the ring by himself first. I kind of delay my coming through the curtain, and then once I do, and I come out of the good guy dressing room, in that arena that night, like looking back, I mean, his music was playing, but gosh, you could have heard a pin drop all of a sudden that when I walked out the curtain, because they're like, what the heck?
What's going to happen?
Get a goal off. What? Because it was mystery partner, right? Nobody knew.
Right.
One of the best kept secrets in wrestling. You'll never do that ever again either. I didn't tell Ivan. The horseman didn't know. Nobody knew who his mystery partner was. It was one of the best kept secrets until that night. In fact, I got to the arena an hour after the show started. I mean, it was really kayfabe, as we called it in those days.
Yeah.
Protected.
Nobody in the dressing room knew?
Not until I walked into the dressing room.
Yeah.
And we're separate dressing rooms in that arena. Yeah. So not until I walked into the dressing room did anyone have a clue of who the mystery partner was. And so... going to the ring, the psychology, I kind of let him get in the ring. I trail, course, Ole and JJ are going to jump on him, and you know the heat's going to start right away. And I pause. I step over the barrier. I pause. I step up to the door of the cage. I pause. All that was intentional to build the anticipation of what is going to happen here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the minute, of course, I step through the ropes and Ole kind of comes towards me and I tear into Ole. I mean, the old expression, you know, the roof came off the wall. You know what? The roof really, to use that expression, really did come off the building. And people, and it's funny, guys, you're talking about how I was hated. I really was. People loved to hate me. The same guys, I'll never forget, that a month earlier, I'm in there wrestling as a heel, you know, one of the baddest of the best. Same guys that were, you know, telling me I was number one in their heart. You know, I know you know what I'm,
yeah,
our listeners
exactly.
know what I mean by that.
Number
and,
one.
And
yeah.
throwing beer cans and everything else at me. These same guys, in an instant, you want to talk about turning fans in an instant. Man, they had their shirts off in the arenas. They were doing my old most muscular pose and the whole deal. And then Dusty helped prompt, but for 15 minutes, they chanted my name. It was crazy.
Yeah.
I was looking back on it. I was like kind of mystified by it, to be honest with you. I was like, wow. Yeah, it was a stellar moment, certainly in my career, to go, wow.
And I don't know if you ever think about it, but you know, most people think about a superstar or a wrestler who kind of blurred those lines, and of course everybody thinks of Steve Austin, Stone Cold. But in a sense, it was. I mean, this was, we're talking what, late '80s there, and it was kind of you. I mean, you were that one, kind of one of the first that really. You know, like I said, you were a shit heel and were able to turn it like that, but you still had that nasty edge that Steve would pull off later. But I don't know if you've ever thought
right.
about that, but that's what it kind of reminded me of, thinking about,
sure.
you know, seeing, going back and looking at this stuff. Did it ever?
Yeah, because I didn't change, right, because I didn't change, I mean, yeah, I may have tweaked my style in the ring a bit, you know, as a babyface, as a good guy, but for the most part, still kind of maintain that rugged edge, that rough and rugged, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and but, you know, it's a lot more, it's accepted a lot easier now, and it was in the, you know, in the late 90s with the, you know, Attitude Era.
Right.
But then, no,
right.
it was very difficult because if they, especially after you'd been around, this wasn't something you were going back
right.
and forth, was an incredible accomplishment. And I don't know if you enjoyed that time. I mean, most guys love being heels, but being a babyface, did you enjoy that, or couldn't wait to get back to who you really were?
great question again. I feel thankful that I had the opportunity to be on both sides of the tracks. I don't know that I would have just wanted to be a, you know, heel my entire career and never having had that experience. And so, you know, pros and cons to everything. But I mean, but that said, you know, certainly enjoyed both aspects of the business. And feel fortunate, thankful, and you know, just blessed that I got to have that experience.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
100%.
That's just awesome. We mentioned Dusty and your opportunity to work with him, but also you would team with the, you would work with the Road Warriors too. And of course, everyone remembers the Great American Bash Tour. But what was it like to work with those guys? I mean, here you got Dusty Rhodes, and then you're also working with two guys from the neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, you know, when it was Ivan and I, you know, working Russian chain matches and those sorts of things, you know, those tag matches and stuff, it really, I felt, again, chemistry, right? It made for really great chemistry between us to oppose one another. Then when we put the superpowers and the Road Warriors together against the Four Horsemen, I mean, we sold out arenas for over two years around the country. I mean, legit.
2 years.
And,
jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it was so much fun. Dude, whether it was 8-man tag, 6-man tag matches, it was a blast. And I had a blast traveling. Like Dusty and I for about 2.5 years, pretty once traveled exclusively together in the car. Now, we flew on planes together except with others, but he and I a lot of times would drive to the towns together and back and, yeah. and here in the Carolinas and talk about just quality time with someone who had become a dear friend was just a so memorable. Yeah. So memorable.
Yeah. So you're born Nelson Scott Simpson, and why? And I know you hated Nelson, but why the name change? Why did you decide to make it official and do it legally in 88?
Well, again, I want to get the character over. Right? I don't think it was earlier than that. I don't think it was.
Oh, was it?
I think so. It was pretty quick after my rise to, you might say, rise to stardom, because once I saw the career of launching taking off, I'm like, okay, this is just another step in locking in this character, securing this character. And funny part to me, a funny part looking back about that story is I flew to Minneapolis to do it, and it was a female judge, and I don't know if she was just trying to impress me or that she knew John Wayne's real name or what, you know, the actor John Wayne, right?
Yeah.
The Duke. Because she, I'm standing in court, and she goes, "Now you know." She goes, "You could do an AKA like Marion, whatever John Wayne's birth name was, right?"
Yeah.
And an AKA, you know. And she's like, and I go, "You know, I appreciate that, ma'am, but not interested in an AKA. I just want to go all the way with this, you know, and just let's just lock it in." And she goes, "Okay, just thought, you know, want to give you that option, you know." And I'm like, "Well, appreciate it, but." Not interested in doing an AKA. So, again, the mentality was, I figured, hey, I'm going to be flying on airplanes, getting stopped by cops for speeding, you know, one day. you know, they're going to see a driver's license, and they're going to see Nikita Koloff on that driver's license and go, wow, this cat really is, he's the real deal.
Yeah. Did you trademark it?
I did.
Mm-hmm. Early on, you were one of those guys who realized this... This may make me money.
I was the first guy ever to hire a business manager, I believe. Again, Tim Peltier, the same guy that played quarterback in high school and college. I hired him as a business manager and did a stellar job of taking care of me. Sent him, Crockett's checks would be mailed to Minnesota to him, and he would simply send me an allowance, a weekly allowance. That's how it worked.
Uh-huh.
So I never saw what I made from week to week. It just went directly to him. And Tim is the one who trademarked it, had the foresight to trademark it, as well as do several other things legally. But
invest,
that was one of them.
Tim, for you too?
Tim trademarked it.
Uh-huh.
Did he invest for you too?
Did. Yep.
That's good, man.
He did it all.
Yeah.
He did it all.
You found a good one. You know, so many other guys lost millions, you know, trusting other people, but.
Well, what's a little side note here.
Yeah.
So once guys got wind of that, you know, cause he had the investment group, he had an attorney group, he had a CPA group. I mean, he was smart enough to be the kind of the hub and have all these guys around him doing all these other things. Okay.
Yeah.
Get the picture.
Yeah.
Well, eventually, these other guys found out about it, and one by one, at one point, on his payroll, he had Nikita Koloff, he had Joe Laurinaitis, Mike Hegstrand, Kurt Hennig, Barry Darso, Big Boss Man. He had about 10 guys on his payroll.
That's
at one
his own
point.
Agency. That's great.
He did. Yeah. Yes. Yep.
That's fantastic.
Yep.
I wanted to get this in because I know it had a dramatic impact on your life. Was when your wife became ill at the time, the wife you had at the time with cancer. And were you riding high in wrestling at that time and just felt this is what I have to do? Or was it already starting to wane a little bit and it was easier for you to step away? What was going on at the time?
So, you know, Mandy, she was 24. She got diagnosed with Hodgkin's. Got it into remission for a short period of time. Came back with a vengeance up to stage 4. And it was at that point when it came back with a vengeance. She was very, very sick that I went to what we affectionately called the Ivory Towers in Atlanta, sat down with Jim Herd and the powers to be, and said, okay, the character was not waning, that I was main event. I was, still hot, hot in the industry. And I just said, this is what I got to do. I got a wife dying of cancer here, and I'm going to step away. And I told them, I go, guys, I'll be back, but I got to take a sabbatical. And my wife's dying of cancer. I've got to go take care of her and try to nurse her through this, nurse her back to health and do this. And quite frankly, they were not pleased about it, my decision.
Really?
Because I was main event.
Yeah.
No. I mean, look, the mentality of that business is wrestling needs to be your number one deal. I mean, that's got to be your priority. And I say that, and here's why I feel I can say that, okay? So I step away. I take care of her. She passes away. Week or two later, I'm down at Ric Flair's house. He's got the book at this point. He's the booker. Mm-hmm. I'm down at his house in Charlotte. He offers me the world title if I'll come back. Mm. I turn him down. He calls me a second time. I give him some crazy parameters. He goes, they'll never go for that. They didn't go for it. I eventually come back.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. When I came back, they never looked at me the same way as prior to leaving to take care of her. And that's why I feel I can say weren't thrilled about my leaving. They never treated me the same after that.
Wow.
The office. I'm talking about the office.
Yeah.
Never treated me the same after that. In fact, they tried to bury my character, truthfully.
Really?
They did.
But how did that the death of your wife affect you as far as, I guess, making sense of life, like what am I doing? Or because it wasn't too long after that that you really changed your life when you eventually get away from the business. But was it that point when you really kind of took a serious look at what my life is all about?
Well, you know what, Sean? What I would say is this. If I take a glimpse back up, I didn't grow up in Minnesota. I didn't grow up in church. I would say I've always believed in God, but I certainly wasn't living for him or didn't have a relationship with him. But what that did for me at that particular time was open my eyes to the brevity of life. I mean, life's like a morning fog, right? You see it, it's here, you experience it, and it's over. I mean, it's quick. Mm-hmm. And so for her to, die at age 26, it was part of my journey to the altar to give my life to Jesus. That was part of my journey. It didn't happen then, but it was part of my journey to say, man, life can be really, really short. Because she was only 26.
Yeah.
And so even when I went back to wrestling after that, and again, part of the reason I turned Rick down was I just wasn't mentally ready to go back, still grieving over her loss. And then once I felt like I was ready to go back, I went back. But then there was just, between the way they kind of treated me and just my own perspective on all of it was different, right?
Yeah.
Which then would eventually lead me to walk away under my terms, by the way, in spite of what they might have said on television, but under my terms. And then 11 months later, again, finding myself at an altar, surrendering my life to the Lord. But
Well, you mentioned in your book too, and you talk about this with the loss of your wife, but also some of these other people that were in your life, and we've seen it, happen. I really loved Kurt Hennig. I thought he was just an awesome person all the time I worked with him. And, you mentioned Brady Boone and Tom Zink and these other guys, but also Ivan Koloff, yeah, who we lost recently. But how's that all put that in perspective in your life too, as far as you know, we've seen that these guys were just full of life, God, when we knew them, and it was over like that. I mean, Kurt, God, so young, you know, in a sense.
Yeah, and it was interesting, cause, you know, again, I go to school with Kurt, you know, yeah. His wife, she was a cheerleader, so, you know, I knew his wife, yeah. You know, I knew he had, you know, all the kids, and in fact, his wife had a sister that was in my group age. So his wife graduated with him in 76. She had a sister who graduated with me in 77. Hey, we look back on those days. Everyone loved the cheerleaders, right? And you know, they were beautiful girls back then. And so I was like, man, you know, he hit the payload there, right? With his wife. And then of course, Janine, who graduated in my year, you know, everyone thought these girls were beautiful. And so it was kind of like, an eye opener, like, man, you know, just the tragedy of life now, right? Of whether it's cancer or it's unfortunate, you know, a drug overdose, whatever it is, again, the decisions and choices we make in life that can lead to success or failure really comes down to each and every one of us, you know, individually on what our life stands for, what it ends up being, you know, when it's all said and done. And so, yeah, to lose some of these guys, whether it's a car wreck, you know, like Brady Boone, or what's crazy is to me. So you mentioned Tom Zink,
yeah,
Rick Rude, yeah, Kurt Hennig,
yeah,
who all graduated in 1976, who are no longer with us.
Yeah,
right?
I know.
And again, guys, it just goes back to just the brevity of life, and then should open our eyes to, what do I want my life to mean? What do I want? What kind of statement do I want to make when it's all said and done? When people look back on my life, what kind of impact did I make? What kind of impression did I leave with other people? And hopefully it's positive and not a negative one, right?
Yeah.
So and that's where it brings me.
Yeah.
That's where it takes me.
Yeah. And when you you talk about when you came back and it was never really the same, and on both sides of this, you said the people you were working for and in you. And you say when you left, it was without fanfare, but you left on your own terms. People think that there was an injury involved, but it was your decision. You could have been one of those people that kept going and probably found, you know, more success in the ring. But it seems as though you decided that you were going to do it on your own terms, and you did.
Sure, and I did. I was playing with a bunch of football guys this weekend, right? So they understood this when I said, hey, I'm kind of coined as the Barry Sanders of pro wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, you guys probably get that. And they're like, yeah, Barry left in his prime, right? Left the Detroit Lions in his prime of his career. So really, I'm 33. I've already had a pretty decent career leading up to that. And certainly, yeah, could have extended the career. You know, it would have been easy to go another 10 years, whatever, however long, right?
Yeah, right.
Would have been easy to do that. The reason I want people to understand, the number one reason that I left when I did was going, let's go back real quick to the Iron Man magazine, age 12, becoming an athlete, looking at other athletes and wondering, why can these guys not walk away when they're on top? Why do they have to, in my mind, I'm thinking, why do you have to be like has-beens or washed up or, you know, old?
Yeah.
Why can't they just walk away?
Yeah.
So I always said to myself, when I make it one day, I'm going to leave on top. I'm going to leave as a champion. I'm going to leave as a winner, and I'm not hanging around. And I told Don and Ivan, we argued about it for the first 2 weeks I was in wrestling. I said, guys, I'll be out of active wrestling by the time I'm 35. And they're like,
yeah.
You know, we went back and forth. Right. Finally, yeah. I just stopped. But I was 33, getting ready to turn 34. And I said, you know what? I'm done. I'm done. Walk away.
Yeah. So Vader hurt you, but the people thinking he ended your career is not the case. You just, you had to heal. And if you would have wanted to come back, you could have, but, you had somebody, fortunately, somebody, I, I imagine, took care of your money, so that wasn't going to be something you were concerned with, and you could have another life.
Yeah, life after wrestling. I used to argue with guys, tons of guys. We'd be riding the cars, yeah, and I'd go, hey, guys, there's life after wrestling, you know. Now, some of the guys, unfortunately, their mentality was, no, this is all I know. This is all I can do. I mean, we would argue up and down the roads. I'd go, no, don't sell yourself so short. No, you have other gifts and talents, not just in the ring. You can do other things with your life. And I'm telling you, someone would go, no, this is all I can do. I'm like, all right, whatever, whatever. But I knew for myself, I had this conversation with Bill Watts when he came in and took the book at WCW. I literally said, hey, Bill, I want you to understand something up front. I know how you operate. I just want to be just transparent with you. I can do other things. I have a college degree, a college education. I'm here, but I can do other things. So just understand that. And I believe he respected that. Mm-hmm. And I gained respect from him by saying that to him. So when I made the decision to leave wrestling, and it wasn't, guys, it wasn't like I made multiple millions of dollars like the guys do now, because I didn't. And yes, I had a business manager that, you know, did take care of me. Because, look, the last official payroll I've been on was WCW in 1992. Nobody's sending me a check. Yeah. Vince McMahon's not sending me a royalty check. Yeah. I'm out here on my own since 1992, making a living.
Wow. And you mentioned it with Vince. Why did you never end up in the WWE? I think that is a question many, many people wonder about, because you would have fit right in. I know when I was there, you would have been a huge superstar. Why didn't it happen?
You know what? The answer to that question is I personally never really had an interest or a desire. Seriously, I never really had an interest or a desire to pursue that. He never reached out to me. I never made the phone
really
call to
they somebody must have called you. I mean, that is really, really hard to believe. Really?
No, I have never received not one phone call ever from WWE with an interest in working for WWE, WWF in the day. Not one phone call ever. And the other side of the other part to that story is I felt Jim Crockett gave me the break of a lifetime, the opportunity of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who spent any time around me will find out I'm loyal to the core. I mean, I've been in the Carolinas living longer than I've been in Minnesota, but I'm still a loyal Minnesota Viking, right? I played with Brad Johnson, you know, played quarterback for the Vikings yesterday, won a Super Bowl with the Bucks, and I said, Brad, I'm loyal to the Vikings. Tell me some stories, you know? So he did. But that said, I was loyal to Jim Crockett, Crockett Promotions, even though it was even sold to Ted Turner.
Right.
I still felt like Jim gave me the break. I felt loyal to the NWA. And yes, I did some things with Vern in the AWA to help him out, you know, with Zabisco and some other things. But predominantly, my heart was with the NWA, WCW. You're right. I probably could have went up there and made 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times the amount of money I made with Jim Crockett.
Yeah.
But I just had a loyalty to the NWA.
Wow. Well, it's been awesome talking with you, Nikita, and I've seen video of you. I mean, you are in tremendous shape. How do you keep doing it, and how do you stay in shape the way you are now? Looks like you could step in the ring again.
The desire is not there, but I appreciate it. But I'm a 100, so I was at the gym this afternoon working out after traveling for the last 4 or 5 days and playing 36 holes of golf. Mm-hmm. I was at the gym working out today. I'll be at the gym working out tomorrow. I also maintain a healthy lifestyle eating, and I fast once a week. And for those who might not even understand that term or what that even means, I do it for physical reasons to detox my body, but I also do it for spiritual reasons to draw closer in my walk with the Lord. And that's a very consistent thing I've done for really starting with the gym 47 years ago. And then the last part of that, I got to give credit to the good Lord, just trying to do the best I can to lead a clean life and believe that the good health I have was just a blessing from him by leading as clean a life as I can. So,
and folks, if you want to hear more about these stories and also Nikita's philosophy on life, I mean, pick up the book. It's great. It's called Nikita, A Tale of the Ring and Redemption. How else can they get in touch with you?
They can email me. In fact, Lex Luger and I co-facilitate and do men's ministry together. We just launched a new ministry called Man Camp, they go to mancamp.info, just not mancamp.info, not .com, .org, right. mancamp.info, and they can email me right through that website directly and communicate with me. And of course, Twitter and Instagram, I'm on daily with a little positive post. It's just Nikita Koloff with the number one behind it. That's the real me. Nikita Koloff with the number one behind it.
Awesome. Well, Nikita, thank you so much. I'm glad we were able to chat today and got it together. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, guys. To all the listeners out there, love you guys. I really mean that. You fans are the greatest on the planet. I say it over and over and over again. I'll continue to say it. Appreciate your loyalty. And thank you for the opportunity today, Sean. Appreciate it.
Yep. I hope we meet up sometime down the road.
Yes, sir. Thank you. All right, guys.